"Do you hear the voice of Nimrodel?" asked Legolas. "I will sing you a song of the maiden Nimrodel, who bore the same name as the stream beside which she lived long ago. It is a fair song in our woodland tongue, but this is how it runs in the western speech, as some in Rivendell now sing it." In a voice hardly to be heard amid the rustle of the leaves above them, he began. "An elven maid there was of old, a shining star by day. Her mantle white was hemmed with gold, her shoes of silver grey. A star was bound upon her brows, a light was on her hair, as sun upon the golden boughs in Lorien the fair. Her hair was long, her limbs were white, and fair she was and free, and in the wind she went as light as leaf of linden tree. Beside the falls of Nimrodel, by water clear and cool, her voice as falling silver fell into the shining pool. Where now she wanders, none can tell, in sunlight or in shade, for lost of yore was Nimrodel, and in the mountain strayed the elven ship in haven grey beneath the mountain lee, awaited her for many a day beside the roaring sea. A wind by night in northern lands arose, and loud it cried, and drove the ship from elven strands across the streaming tide. When dawn came dim, the land was lost, the mountain sinking grey. Beyond the heaving waves that tossed their plumes of blinding spray, Amroth beheld the fading shore, now low beyond the swell, and cursed the faithless ship that bore him far from Nimrodel. Of old he was an elven king, a lord of tree and glen, where golden were the boughs in spring in fair Lothlorien. From helm to sea they saw him leap as arrow from the string, and dive into the water deep as mew upon the wing. The wind was in his flowing hair, the foam about him shone. Afar they saw him strong and fair, go riding like a swan. But from the west has come no word, and on the hither shore no tidings elven folk have heard of Amroth evermore. The voice of Legolas faltered, and the song ceased. "I cannot sing any more," he said. "That is but a part, for I have forgotten much. It is long and sad, for it tells how sorrow came upon Lothlorien. Lorien of the Blossom, when the dwarves awakened evil in the mountains."
"But the dwarves did not make the evil," said Gimli.
"I said not so, yet evil came," answered Legolas sadly. "Then many of the elves of Nimrodel's kindred left their dwellings and departed, and she was lost far in the south, in the passes of the White Mountains, and she came not to the ship where Amroth, her lover, waited for her. But in the spring, when the wind is in the new leaves, the echo of her voice may still be heard by the falls that bear her name. And when the wind is in the south, the voice of Amroth comes from the sea, for Nimrodel flows into Silverlode, that elves call Celebrant, and Celebrant into Anduin the Great, and Anduin flows into the Bay of Belfalas, whence the elves of Lorien set sail. But neither Nimrodel nor Amroth ever came back. It is told that she had a house built in the branches of a tree that grew near the falls, for that was the custom of the elves of Lorien, to dwell in the trees, and maybe it is so still. Therefore they were called the Galathrim, the tree people. Deep in their forest the trees are very great.
The people of the woods did not delve in the ground like dwarves, nor build strong places of stone before the shadow came.
And even in these latter days, dwelling in the trees might be thought safer than sitting on the ground, said Gimli.
He looked across the stream to the road that led back to Dimrill Dale, and then up into the roof of dark boughs above.
Your words bring good counsel, Gimli, said Aragorn. We can't build a house, but tonight we'll do as the Galathrim, and seek refuge in the treetops if we can. We have sat here beside the road already longer than was wise.
The company now turned aside from the path, and went into the shadow of the deeper woods, westward along the mountain stream, away from Silverlode. Not far from the falls of Nimrodel, they found a cluster of trees, some of which overhung the stream. Their great grey trunks were of mighty girth, but their height could not be guessed. "I will climb up," said Legolas. "I'm at home among trees, by root or bough, though these trees are of a kind strange to me, save as a name in song. Melian they're called, and are those that bear the yellow blossom, but I have never climbed in one. I will see now what is their shape and way of growth." "Whatever it may be," said Pippin, "they will be marvellous trees indeed if they can offer any rest at night, except to birds. I can't sleep on a perch." "Then dig a hole in the ground," said Legolas, "if that is more after the fashion of your kind. But you must dig swift and deep if you wish to hide from orcs." He sprang lightly up from the ground and caught a branch that grew from the trunk high above his head. But even as he swung there for a moment, a voice spoke suddenly from the tree shadows above him. "Daro!" it said in commanding tone, and Legolas dropped back to earth in surprise and fear. He shrank against the bole of the tree. "Stand still," he whispered to the others. "Do not move or speak." There was a sound of soft laughter over their heads, and then another clear voice spoke in an elven tongue. Frodo could understand little of what was said, for the speech that the sylvan folk east of the mountains used among themselves was unlike that of the west. Legolas looked up and answered in the same language.
"Who are they, and what do they say?" asked Merry.
"They're elves," said Sam. "Can't you hear their voices?"
"Yes, they are elves," said Legolas. "And they say that you breathe so loud that they could shoot you in the dark." Sam hastily put his hand over his mouth. "But they say also that you need have no fear. They have been aware of us for a long while. They heard my voice across the Nimrodel, and knew that I was one of their northern kindred, and therefore they did not hinder our crossing. And afterwards they heard my song. Now they bid me climb up with Frodo, for they seem to have had some tidings of him and of our journey. The others they asked to wait a little, and to keep watch at the foot of the tree, until they have decided what is to be done." Out of the shadows a ladder was let down. It was made of rope, silver-grey and glimmering in the dark, and though it looked slender, it proved strong enough to bear many men. Legolas ran lightly up, and Frodo followed slowly. Behind came Sam, trying not to breathe loudly. The branches of the Malorn tree grew out nearly straight from the trunk, and then swept upwards, for near the top the main stem divided into a crown of many boughs, and among these they found that there had been built a wooden platform, or flet, as such things were called in those days. The elves called it a talan. It was reached by a round hole in the centre through which the ladder passed. When Frodo came at last up onto the flet, he found Legolas seated with three other elves. They were clad in shadowy grey, and could not be seen among the tree stems unless they moved suddenly. They stood up, and one of them uncovered a small lamp that gave out a slender silver beam. He held it up, looking at Frodo's face and Sam's. Then he shut off the light again, and spoke words of welcome in his elven tongue. Frodo spoke haltingly in return.
"Welcome,"
The elf then said again in the common language, speaking slowly, "We seldom use any tongue but our own, for we dwell now in the heart of the forest and do not willingly have dealings with any other folk. Even our own kindred in the north are sundered from us. But there are some of us still who go abroad for the gathering of news and the watching of our enemies, and they speak the languages of other lands. I am one. Haldir is my name. My brothers Rumil and Orofin speak little of your tongue. But we have heard rumors of your coming, for the messengers of Elrond passed by Lorien on their way home up the Dimrill Stair. We had not heard of hobbits or halflings for many a long year, and did not know that any yet dwelt in Middle-earth. You do not look evil, and since you come with an elf of our kindred, we are willing to befriend you, as Elrond asked. Though it is not our custom to lead strangers through our land, but you must stay here tonight. How many are you?"
"Eight," said Legolas. "Myself, four hobbits, and two men, one of whom, Aragorn, is a friend of the folk of Westerness."
"The name of Aragorn, son of Arathorn, is known in Lorien," said Haldir, "and he has the favour of the lady. All then is well, but you have yet spoken only of seven."
"The eighth is a dwarf," said Legolas.
"A dwarf?" said Haldir.
"That is not well. We have not had dealings with the dwarves since the dark days. They are not permitted in our land. I cannot allow him to pass."
"But he is from the Lonely Mountain, one of Dayan's trusty people, and friendly to Elrond," said Frodo. "Elrond himself chose him to be one of our companions, and he has been brave and faithful."
The elves spoke together in soft voices, and questioned Legolas in their own tongue.
"Very good," said Haldir at last. "We will do this, though it is against our liking. If Aragorn and Legolas will guard him, and answer for him, he shall pass. But he must go blindfold through Lothlorien. But now we must debate no longer. Your folk must not remain on the ground. We've been keeping watch on the rivers ever since we saw a great troop of orcs going north toward Moria, along the skirts of the mountains many days ago. Wolves are howling on the woods borders. If you have indeed come from Moria, the peril cannot be far behind. Tomorrow early you must go on. The four hobbits shall climb up here and stay with us. We do not fear them. There is another Talon in the next tree. There the others must take refuge. You, Legolas, must answer to us for them. Call us if anything is amiss, and have an eye on that dwarf." Legolas at once went down the ladder to take Haldir's message, and soon afterwards Merry and Pippin clambered up onto the high flat. They were out of breath and seemed rather scared.
"There," said Merry, panting, "we've lugged up your blankets as well as our own. Strider has hidden all the rest of the baggage in a deep drift of leaves."
"You had no need of your burdens, Haldir. It is cold in the treetops in winter, though the wind tonight is in the south. But we have food and drink to give you that will drive away the night chill, and we have skins and cloaks to spare."
The hobbits accepted this second, and far better, supper very gladly. Then they wrapped themselves warmly, not only in the fur cloaks of the elves, but in their own blankets as well, and tried to go to sleep. But weary as they were, only Sam found that easy to do. Hobbits not like heights, and do not sleep upstairs, even when they have any stairs. The flat was not at all to their liking as a bedroom. It had no walls, not even a rail. Only on one side was there a light, plaited screen, which could be moved and fixed in different places according to the wind. Pippin went on talking for a while.
"I hope, if I do go to sleep in this bedloft, that I shan't roll off," he said.
"Once I do get to sleep," said Sam, "I shall go on sleeping, whether I roll off or no. And the less said, the sooner I'll drop off, if you take my meaning."
Frodo lay for some time awake, and looked up at the stars glinting through the pale roof of quivering leaves. Sam was snoring at his side long before he himself closed his eyes. He could dimly see the grey forms of two elves sitting motionless with their arms about their knees, speaking in whispers. The other had gone down to take up his watch on one of the lower branches. At last, lulled by the wind in the boughs above and the sweet murmur of the falls of Nimrodel below, Frodo fell asleep with the song of Legolas running in his mind. Late in the night he awoke. The other hobbits were asleep. The elves were gone. The sickle moon was gleaming dimly among the leaves. The wind was still. A little way off he heard a harsh laugh and the tread of many feet on the ground below. There was a ring of metal. The sounds died slowly away and seemed to go southward, on into the wood. A head appeared suddenly through the hole in the flat. Frodo sat up in alarm and saw that it was a grey-hooded elf. He looked towards the hobbits. "What is it?" said Frodo. "Hish!" said the elf in a hissing whisper, and cast onto the flat the rope ladder rolled up. "Orcs!" said Frodo. "What are they doing?" But the elf had gone. There were no more sounds. Even the leaves were silent, and the very falls seemed to be hushed. Frodo sat and shivered in his wraps. He was thankful that they had not been caught on the ground, but he felt that the trees offered little protection except concealment. Orcs were as keen as hounds on a scent, it was said, but they could also climb. He drew out Sting. It flashed and glittered like a blue flame, and then slowly faded again and grew dull. In spite of the fading of his sword, the feeling of immediate danger did not leave Frodo. Rather, it grew stronger. He got up and crawled to the opening and peered down. He was almost certain that he could hear stealthy movements at the tree's foot far below. Not elves, for the woodland folk were altogether noiseless in their movements. Then he heard faintly a sound like sniffing, and something seemed to be scrabbling on the bark of the tree trunk. He stared down into the dark, holding his breath. Something was now climbing slowly, and its breath came like a soft hissing through closed teeth. Then, coming up, close to the stem, Frodo saw two pale eyes. They stopped and gazed upward, unwinking. Suddenly they turned away, and a shadowy figure slipped round the trunk of the tree and vanished. Immediately afterwards Haldir came climbing swiftly up through the branches. "There was something in this tree that I have never seen before," he said. "It was not an orc. It fled as soon as I touched the tree stem. It seemed to be wary, and to have some skill in trees, or I might have thought that it was one of you hobbits. I did not shoot, for I dared not arouse any cries. We cannot risk a battle. A strong company of orcs has passed. They crossed the Nimrodel, cursed their foul feet in its clean water, and went on down the old road beside the river. They seemed to pick up some scent, and they searched the ground for a while near the place where you halted. The three of us could not challenge 100, so we went ahead and spoke with feigned voices, leading them on into the wood. Orofin has now gone in haste back to our dwellings to warn our people. None of the orcs will ever return out of Lorien, and there will be many elves hidden on the northern border before another night falls. But you must take the road south as soon as it is fully light." Day came pale from the east. As the light grew, it filtered through the yellow leaves of the mallorn, and it seemed to the hobbits that the early sun of a cool summer's morning was shining. Pale blue sky peeped among the moving branches. Looking through an opening on the south side of the flat, Frodo saw all the valleys of the Silverlode lying like a sea of fallow gold, tossing gently in the breeze. The morning was still young and cold when the company set out again, guided now by Haldir and his brother Rumil. "Farewell, sweet Nimrodel," cried Legolas. Frodo looked back and caught a gleam of white foam among the grey tree stems. Farewell, he said. It seemed to him that he would never hear again a running water so beautiful, for ever blending its innumerable notes in an endless, changeful music. They went back to the path that still went on along the west side of the Silver Lode, and for some way they followed it southward. There were the prints of orc feet in the earth, but soon Haldir turned aside into the trees and halted on the bank of the river under their shadows. "There is one of my people yonder across the stream," he said, "though you may not see him." He gave a call like the low whistle of a bird, and out of a thicket of young trees an elf stepped, clad in grey, but with his hood thrown back. His hair glinted like gold in the morning sun. Haldir skilfully cast over the stream a coil of grey rope, and he caught it and bound the end about a tree near the bank. "Celebrant is already a strong stream here, as you see," said Haldir, "and it runs both swift and deep, and is very cold. We do not set foot in it so far north unless we must. But in these days of watchfulness we do not make bridges. This is how we cross. Follow me." He made his end of the rope fast about another tree, and then ran lightly along it, over the river and back again, as if he were on a road.